John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for not, oh no, my phone's just sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Bukitas, who plays a sour note. W is tie is this, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.immc.org, for Tuesday, February 28, 2012. Gaza power plant goes offline due to fuel crisis, while in the West Bank, Israeli troops arrested 5 civilians in morning invasions. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. Palestinian officials told IMEMC on Tuesday that the lack of fuel caused the only Gaza power plant to go offline, second time in 2 weeks. Blackouts could reach up to 13 hours a day in some areas of the Gaza Strip. Ahmed Abu Al-Amarin, the information officer of the Energy Authority in Gaza, told IMEMC that the authorities are waiting on Egypt to send in the needed fuel into Gaza via Rafah crossing. Last week, Cairo agreed to supply Gaza with all needed fuel supply and increase the supply of electricity to Gaza. In normal situation, Gaza needs 300 megawatts of electricity a day. But since the Israeli siege on Gaza that started in 2007, the Strip only gets 120 megawatts, which comes from Israel and Egyptian power lines, while 80 megawatts come from the power plant. Abu Al-Amarin explained that now parts of Gaza will be dark for 13 hours a day, water filters and sanitation clarifiers will be affected by the electricity outage, along with local hospitals as well. Since the Israeli siege, Gaza became dependent on fuel coming via the underground tunnels at the borders with Egypt. The fuel crisis increased in recent weeks when the Egyptian army cracked down on those tunnels. Today, Egyptian security stopped 7,000 liters of fuel en route to Gaza via tunnels. In other news, Israeli forces invaded on Tuesday morning Jenin refugee camp in northern West Bank and arrested 5 civilians, while in a separate incident, settlers attacked the village of Halhul near southern West Bank city of Hebron. Local sources reported that an Israeli army force stormed Jenin refugee camp in the early morning hours and searched homes before arresting 5 civilians. Army invasions were also reported at Jenin City and nearby villages of Arraba, Fahma and Kabatia, but no arrests were made, local sources reported. Elsewhere on Tuesday, a group of Israeli settlers stormed the village of Al-Hul near southern West Bank city of Hebron. The settlers clashed with local youth before Israeli soldiers removed the settlers and fired tear gas at local youth. No injuries or arrests were made. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Tuesday, February 28th daily roundup of news from occupied Palestinian territories. Join us again tomorrow for more reports and updates, or visit our website at www.imemc.org. This has been brought to you by Hussam Kassis and me, Ghassan Bannoura.
Afghanistan, Sunday. 7 or 8 U.S. soldiers were wounded in Kunduz when Afghan protesters against Koran-burning U.S. troops threw one or more hand grenades. A gun battle then resulted. The fighting killed 2 protesters, but wounded 7 or 8 U.S. troops, depending on whose report you believe. Afghanistan, yesterday. A suicide car bomber rammed the gates of a NATO air base serving foreign Air Force planes in Jalalabad and detonated. The blast killed 6 civilians, 2 airport guards, and 1 soldier near the base gate. The Taliban has taken credit for this attack as vengeance for the burning of Korans by U.S. troops who then left the partially burned books in the garbage at Bagram Air Base a week ago. Afghanistan, ongoing. The U.S. has withdrawn its troops from all ministries in response to the assassination of 2 army officers on Saturday in the Interior Ministry. An Afghan intelligence officer is being blamed for the shootings, but has not been captured. Now some U.S. officials are saying their entire strategy of trying to hand off control of Afghanistan to local stooges so they can withdraw their own troops is in doubt. I guess there'll be no Vietnamization of this war. Iraq, ongoing. Muqtada al-Sadr has bluntly called Prime Minister Maliki a, quote, dictator hungry for acclaim. This even though they are both Shiites in a nation riven by sectarian hatred and warfare between Shiites and Sunnis. Deputy Prime Minister Salah al-Mulak of the Sunni Iraqi bloc has said the same thing and has refused to apologize for it in an extensive interview with Ashraq al-Aswad. Maliki, as you may recall, has gone so far as to attempt unsuccessfully to arrest Deputy Prime Minister Salah al-Mulak on trumped-up charges of a sectarian nature. Washington, D.C., Sunday. U.S. religious extremist and presidential candidate Rick Santorum has denounced President Obama's apology for the Koran-burning incident, but not in the same way people in Afghanistan have denounced it. Santorum has gone so far as to say that no apology is needed, an explicit endorsement of an act that has led to dozens of deaths. Santorum's words are what I would expect from the Taliban if somebody was to burn Bibles at Ground Zero and leave the ashes to be found. As you may recall, a Koran was already burned there by an extremist lured there on September 11, 2011, by a right-wing preacher's canceled plans to do the same. Still another right-wing preacher burned the Koran in Florida at about the same time. What will happen if Santorum becomes president and either orders further desecration of the Koran by U.S. troops or burns it himself? Mr. Barack Obama, why should Americans go to Afghanistan to fight the Taliban when we've got our own Christian Taliban right here? Don't tell me those burned Korans found in a garbage pit at Bagram Air Base were unintentional. I can't imagine anybody, after even a month in Afghanistan, being that stupid. The GOP primaries for the 2012 presidential election are beginning to take on an ugly sectarian undertone. We've got violently anti-gay and anti-birth control activist Rick Santorum attacking Barack Obama, a sitting president, for being the wrong kind of Christian. The only other country I know of where this kind of sectarian religious attack is being made on a head of state or any member of his cabinet is Iraq, where Prime Minister Maliki, a Shiite, is trying to have the Sunni vice president arrested. If the 2012 election in the U.S. turns on sectarian issues, both GOP frontrunners will have a problem. The last Catholic U.S. president was Kennedy, but he did not need a single vote from GOP Southern Fundamentalist Protestant Christians to get elected. Mitt Romney, a Mormon, would be rejected by a lot of Southern Baptists and other so-called evangelicals as not being a Christian at all, while Santorum, being a Catholic, would have to overcome bigotry by some fundamentalist Protestants that regard the Catholic Bible as satanic or worse. Maybe that's why Santorum is campaigning so aggressively on anti-women and anti-birth control issues, so beloved of the religious right, get ahead of the sectarian problem? If so, I don't know what the elephant in the room is smoking. Some kind of hashish, I suppose, but I do not want to hit on it, and I hope to God it goes out before November.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to wsqtradio@hushmail.com. Repeat, wsqtradio@hushmail.com. On the 27th of February, Prince George's County homeowner Bertina Jones showed up at Freddie Mac, backed up by Reverend Hagler and Occupy protesters, demanding a meeting and loan modification instead of being foreclosed on after meeting all of Freddie Mac's and Bank of America's prior demands. In addition to Occupy, a Catholic group was on hand with a gigantic golden bull symbolizing the golden calf labeled greed and false idol.
Freddie Mac was not listening to me. They're listening to me now. As they say, can you hear me now?
Ooh.
Because I wrote them, I did court documents, I did everything that I possibly could to resolve this issue. And they refuse. I'm just, they don't have to deal with me. Their lawyers won't even return your call.
How long has this been going on for?
It's been going on for since September 2010.
When Occupy showed up, building management and the cops locked the front doors, blocking not only Freddie Mac's lawyers, but clients of all the other tenants in the building from entering by the front, told them to go around the side door.
They want to foreclose on.
We're here to tell them where they can take that.
Foreclosures now.
When our homes are under attack, what do we do?
Stand up, fight back.
When our homes are under attack, what do we do?
Stand up.
Police and building security refused to let Miss Bertina through the front door to meet with the boneheads at Freddie Mac. We soon found out the businessmen were getting in by the side door.
Yep, parking garage too.
Freddie got bailed out.
We got sold out.
Let me explain to you 1 second. What they were doing was that they had created this as an alternate entrance. People were coming and going out of the building. The way I found that out was I found a police officer whispering to somebody who was trying to go in the building.
That's what they do.
And they started walking up the street. And I started following them up the street. And the cops saw me following up the street and called them back. And told him to go and try to throw me off of his trail. Right? When he doubled back, I knew this was the entrance. And when they opened the door, sure enough, somebody went in. I tried to go in, and I was wrestled backwards.
Wrestled?
Right?
Now,
I saw it!
No, wait a minute. I'm not going to fault the police officers.
Why?
They're here to do their job. I'm here to do my job as well.
That's right.
Hey.
Yeah. Your job as well.
Yeah.
So we understand that people got their job in this. But Freddie Mac is protected in this building. And we need to keep some people out front and people over here.
Yeah.
If we got people out front and people over
there's
here,
there's no one out front now.
We effectively close this building down.
Yeah!
Woo!
And we're going to make not only Freddie Mac, but every tenant in this building a little bit uncomfortable,
that's
the way
right.
they made Miss Jones uncomfortable.
Yeah! Because we were out here shutting down the building, Miss Jones and Reverend Hagler are headed inside. They've been allowed in.
With all the doors of the building under siege and all the other tenants screaming, Freddie Mac had no choice but to meet with Bertina Jones.
Yeah, how did they go in there?
Well, they accepted the letter, and they wouldn't have a meeting with me, but they did let me and Reverend Hagler in, and they accepted the letter.
Can you describe what the letter said?
The letter said that all the complaints that I have and how they illegally took my home. Or trying to take my home.
What is your situation right now?
I'm still in the home.
Where do things go from here? Were you satisfied with the response that you got?
No, I wasn't. But they said that they will be contacting, someone will be contacting, their attorney will be contacting.
Why did you feel it was important and, you know, a good choice for you to get involved with this group and kind of have the backing of the Occupy folks here with you?
Because it's a movement that we need to get involved with. They're not, Freddie Mac was not listening to me. They're listening to me now. As they say, can you hear me now?
Ooh.
Because I wrote them, I did court documents, I did everything that I possibly could to resolve this issue, and they refuse. I'm just, they don't have to deal with it. Their lawyers won't even return your calls.
How long has this been going on for?
It's been going on for since September of 2010.
You're damn right to hear Miss Bertina Jones now. Shortly after the protest ended, it was announced that Freddie Mac has decided to backpedal under foreclosure instead of work with Bertina Jones to modify her mortgage. Direct Action gets the goods. It always has. It always will. And in the meantime, here's a skit that took place at the end of the rally.
I need to keep a path right here. Just right here. This is all I need. Yeah.
At that point, the guy dressed as a banker in a cardboard symbolic bank wrenched away the house and handed it to a Confederate who impaled it on a spit.
I was working very hard. I had just enough to pay my mortgage. But the bank just wouldn't get my money. I banged on the door. I mailed them. I emailed them. They just wouldn't. They wouldn't let me give them my mortgage. I wouldn't be able to stay in my own home. What was I going to tell my boy?
Well, you're being foreclosed on. Too bad. Give it over
no!
here.
Time for the guy dressed as a bank to be foreclosed on.
I was on a birthright trip in Israel.
The man playing this role is a Jewish activist. I've often seen him around Occupy DC in a yarmulke. He's real. He has a right to speak about this.
And while I was away, it turns out that the person who was handling my property wasn't paying the mortgage with the rent that I gave them. So I come back to a nice surprise of not having a home anymore. It's a very nice welcome back, but the banks decided that I just needed to be foreclosed on, even though I was diligent in paying my rent and was unjustly foreclosed on. This is... Why?
The wheel is round.
Why is it that
even though you work for the bank?
What I'm working for so hard!
Even the banker. The wheel is round, baby. What comes around goes around.
Yeah. I have two children.
Again, Occupy protesters and Ms. Bertina Jones have won on this issue. Freddie Mac has thrown in the towel and agreed to work with Ms. Jones to modify her mortgage instead of foreclosing. Direct Action gets the goods. The 20th of February was a national day of protest and action against horrific conditions in U.S. prisons and jails. Here in D.C., Occupy D.C. and a variety of community organizations protested in front of the D.C. jail.
Say no to the new Jim Crow! Say no to the new Jim Crow!
There were three main demands concerning D.C. One is that privatization of prisons be ended. Many D.C. prisoners get sent to federal hell holes owned and operated by corporations like CCA and the GEO Group, which in turn is heavily invested in by Wells Fargo Bank. The GEO Group runs Rivers Correctional Institution, a private prison notorious for torture and medical neglect that a hell of a lot of D.C. inmates have passed through.
This is big business. D.C. sends as many people to prison for parole revocations as they do for committing felonies. Right, this is crazy.
Yes,
as many people for not breaking the law as for breaking the law. So why do they do that? Well, one reason they do that because there's big money in it, not only for CCA, but for Wells Fargo Bank.
Yeah, that's right.
Wells Fargo is a collaborator with the GEO Group. The GEO Group runs something called Rivers Correctional Institution. It's a couple steps here, but basically they arrest you in D.C. on a parole revocation for not breaking the law. They pull you in here for a few months, and then they ship you down to Rivers where somebody can make more money off your body. They don't give a crap what happens to you, but there's money to be made by both GEO Group and by Wells Fargo. So what people demand, boycott Wells Fargo.
The so-called correctional treatment facility next to the D.C. jail is another corporate-owned facility, as it is owned and operated by CCA, the so-called Corrections Corporation of America. In addition to demanding the closure of corporate-owned prisons and an end to mass incarceration across the U.S., there were two very specific D.C. demands. One was an end to routine pretrial detention of black and Latino defendants in D.C. jail on the smallest of charges.
It's about controlling, oppressing, and destroying black and brown people. Institutions in this country have historically controlled, oppressed, and destroyed black and brown people. Now, back in the day, during slavery, during Jim Crow, all that stuff, they were more upfront about that racism, right? They were bold about it. They just said, oh, you're black, you're brown, you don't have rights, you're not equal. That's it. Now, today, in the post-racial America we live in, we got a black president, they don't say that. What they've done is that they've taken out the word black, they've taken out the word brown, and they've inserted in that the word criminal.
The other demand was that the D.C. jail drop the planned total replacement of inmate visitation with video conferencing only. This is an outrage. Prisoners have the right to visitation with family members, and here's what one protester had to say about it.
They know the video, face-to-face is the way to go.
They're here, yeah.
They want to implement a system over here where our inmates over here at this district jail have to be visited by a video screen over at another facility. The renovation of that facility for this purpose is going to take millions of dollars. those dollars can be well spent right there in that jail.
Hear, hear.
The environmental and sanitary conditions of the jail need to be upgraded.
That's right.
They can spend money there. They don't. They give them minimum. They give the inmates minimum hygiene products when they come in. They give them a little bit, enough to say they gave it to them, but it's not enough. They need new mattresses. You know what the result can be from sleeping on bad mattresses. The bed bugs, other types of, you know, mites and everything. They could do that. There's a lot more. They could renovate the space that they have for visiting right now. They can upgrade those phones. They can widen that area. And then the director has told two different groups in 1 week that one of the reasons is because they're not able to have visitation on weekends and holidays because of staff shortage. But you're going to have to pay the staff for them to visit over there, so why can't they pay for them to visit right here?
Here, here. That's
a very poor excuse.
Big lies, lies.
And hey, D.C. Jail, D.C. Council, and so-called Superior Court, just remember, what comes around goes around. And you are breeding crime by torturing prisoners. Same goes for all you employers who won't hire returning citizens. What are the people you won't hire supposed to eat, and where are they supposed to live? GEO Group is a private prison corporation, the second largest in the world. Among other things, they run Rivers Correctional Institution, where many inmates from Washington, D.C. have been sent. Wells Fargo is being boycotted by many D.C. residents because Wells Fargo took their bailout money to buy a large stake in GEO Group. On the 24th of February, Anonymous and Antisec hacked the GEO Group's website, replacing their normal website with a rap video featuring a photograph of Mumia Abu-Jamal, who was formerly on death row, and carrying this communique: wiped off the net. Welcome again to another round of attacks on our most favorite days. Fuck FBIF Friday. I hope you got a quick laugh out of that Dayton, Ohio InfraGuard defacement earlier, but rest easy, fellow pirates. More mayhem is on the way. As part of our ongoing efforts to dismantle the prison industrial complex, we attacked one of the largest private prison corporations in the U.S., GEO Group. Despite the well-documented history of corruption, scandal, and atrocities that companies like GEO perpetuate each and every minute our friends are locked behind our prison walls, the private prison industry is still booming. While most folks are suffering under the economy, many billions of dollars are being funneled into the sinister, conniving alliance of capitalist and statist forces to try to build dozens and dozens of new prisons around the world. What they did not figure into their plans was a determined effort to shut them down. What they did not expect was that Anonymous has been lurking their shitty Windows V-host for months and finally pulled the trigger. You mad? We are acting in solidarity with all those who have ever been wrongfully profiled, arrested, brutalized, incarcerated, and have had all dignity and humanity stripped from them as they are cast into the gulags of America. On February 28th, our fellow Anons and occupiers will be marching in the streets of the U.S. to demand an end of the suppression of the occupation movement. But our solidarity does not extend only to occupiers or political prisoners. We do not give any legitimacy or credibility to a justice system that looks after their own prosecutors and pigs who get away with brutality and corruption while they routinely murder innocent people on death row and lock up immigrants they deem, quote, illegal, while profiting by forcing them to do labor for less than minimum wage. When our comrades are locked up struggling against a repressive regime that has no concern for due process, we do not forget. When our comrades are ripped off their civil liberties and human liberties, we do not forgive. We will abolish their prisons in all forms and run the pigs off our streets. We will burn down their prison society, because only on the ashes of the old world can we hope to rebuild a new one. Solidarity means attack! 16th of February. Protesters from Respect DC and Occupy DC joined forces to shut down Walmart's demolition of the old Curtis Chevrolet site on Georgia Avenue for the day. Protesters showed up at 7 a.m. prior to the start of their workday, to the dismay of two officials from Folger Pratt. Folger Pratt is a developer that hopes to have Walmart as their tenant for the site, but first they have to demolish all the old buildings there. They've already trashed the historic old car barn that once served the city's trolley lines just days after preservation advocates were defeated in court. With protesters on site, the two Folger Pratt officials refused to open the gates of the site, turning away at least three heavy trucks. The first of them was the Port-A-Potty pump-out truck. Guys here to pump out the porta-johns, but the site's locked up. They're not here. That means the porta-potties don't get pumped. That's gonna sting. The day they come to clean out the porta-johns is not the day they have the site shut down. Oh, maybe they gave him a key. They don't pump them potties, it's gonna stink around here, so he's... Ooh, you hear that? No. Part of the construction crew for Walmart got passers-by saying, kick your asses. Them porta-johns are gonna stink, but not as bad as Walmart does. Folger Pratt then begged police to move protesters out of the driveway in front of the gate, but police just told protesters about the three warnings and mass arrest procedures that could be followed if they refused to move. They said the porta potty truck was going to be back, but it never showed up.
Okay. If you don't, then we have to start going down the road with warnings and everything else, and you could be subjecting yourself to arrest.
Right.
So, just let me know how you guys want to proceed.
Well, I guess we'll know how to proceed once workers try to come in.
Well, she's coming back. I just told her to turn around and come back.
Oh, that sanitation truck.
Huh?
The sanitation truck?
Yeah, and the lady in the Range Rover.
The Range Rover, I didn't see.
Maybe it's time to get the tents.
You like a sign?
No, thanks. I'm good. No, they called us because you guys...
Folger Pratt people complained to the police about being unable to get into the site. There was only one person from Folger Pratt wanted to get in. Bring the porta-john pump-out crew in, but of course there's protesters here, and she didn't have the guts to just unlock the door anyway, so she went to the cops, but protesters are still here. No sign of the work crews that are supposed to come, according to the police. It's now 8:30. The gist of it was this. Protesters refused to move. The other two trucks were unable to enter, and although protesters were done by about 9:30 a.m., workers had already been told not to show up for the day, and at 1 p.m. it was announced by Occupy DC that demolition had been stopped for the entire day. Folger Pratt claimed they had no plans to work the site that day, but that's easy to say when they didn't have the option of working. To idle the site for a day cost them money and equipment rentals that continue to run with or without anything getting done at the job site. Meanwhile, while protesters were on site, some people going by yelled support for the protests in opposition to Walmart. Say no to Walmart.
Go jobs! Take the jobs away! Support Walmart!
You heard that, Walmart. Respect DC and get the hell out. While Sea Shepherd has been busy chasing Japan's illegal whaling fleet over 12,000 miles, Greenpeace has just carried out another successful mission in New Zealand. On the 27th of February, six Greenpeace activists and actress Lucy Lawless were arrested after coming down from the onboard drilling rig on an oil drilling ship belonging to Shell. The ship was to depart from the coast of Alaska, where Shell has plans to do BP-style underwater drilling in a place where it would be totally impossible to cap a blowout of the type BP had at Macondo in the Gulf of Mexico. On Friday, the 24th of February, they boarded the drillship Noble Discoverer in the port of Taranaki, New Zealand, and climbed the derrick to a point where the crew was unable to remove them. During the 4 days they kept the ship pinned in port, Shell got over 130,000 emails demanding they cancel their controversial and unsafe plans to drill for oil on the seacoast off the floor of Alaska. As long as they were in the derrick, the ship could not leave port with them aboard. They had food for several days, My guess is it finally ran out on Monday, the 27th of February, after 4 days aloft. It is being reported that all of the oil off the shore of Alaska would not last more than 3 years of global demand, and for this they're willing to risk another BP-style blowout someplace where they would have no chance to cap it. Hey Shell, somebody needs to put a capping stack on the mouths of each and every one of your executives, publicists, and lobbyists. On the 26th of February, animal rights protesters showed up outside Intermix, a high-end fashion boutique on M Street in Georgetown. Intermix sells fur and is on record as claiming there was no public pressure to stop selling fur. The protesters were there to make them eat these words.
We are DART, defending animal rights today and tomorrow. We're here at Intermix because they still sell fur. They said that if they had enough public pressure, they would stop. So we're here to inform you about what happens to the animals used for fur and ask you to please call Intermix and tell them to stop selling fur. Animals used for fur are often gassed, they're caught in traps, they're kept in tiny bear in cages, they are anally and vaginally electrocuted, and they don't want that to happen to them, and we don't have the right to do it to them. Typically in a 40-inch coat, if it's made from coyotes, 16 coyotes are in that coat, and 48 non-target animals caught in a trap. If a coat is made of wheat, 18 of them were killed, and 54 non-target animals were killed. 60 minks and 180 non-target animals were killed. 45 possums and 135 non-target animals were killed. 20 otters and 60 non-target animals were killed. 40 raccoons, 120 non-target animals killed. 50 sables, 150 non-target animals. 50 muskrats, 150 non-target animals. 15 beavers, 45 non-target animals. Trapped, in traps, suffering, gnawing off their own legs to escape, being attacked by other predators, dying a slow, painful death for a 40-inch coat. This photograph is of a raccoon dog, a very peaceful dog who lives in Russia. This photograph was taken shortly before she died. Her skin ripped from her body. She was tossed on a pile of other dead and dying dogs for something we don't need. We do not need fur. We do not have the right to take it from them. Our vanity means their death. Our greed means their death.
Intermix is still selling fur.
And they said that if they had enough public pressure, they would stop selling fur.
Hey, Intermix, what do you say? What do you say?
Intermix, there is plenty of public pressure to quit selling fur. Activists warn that this just gets worse and worse unless you do the right thing and get fur products off your shelves.